Podtacular, episode 301, Halo 4 Forward Unto Dawn, for August 1st, 2012. Everyone, welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I'm your host, Dustorm, and this week I have three Waypoint moderators. They come from a variety of different Halo communities.
I definitely thought he was going to say white something.
Dude, I heard that too. We have three white
moderators. I was like, really?
Well, all of you are white too, and I'm white, so it makes sense. But
that's great.
That's not what people will hear.
I'm probably the tannest one. I'm the Floridian.
Great start, guys. That was awesome.
I've got the most rakizal in me. Wait.
Why? How much do you have in you?
Oh, I don't know. That's a conundrum. Yeah.
How much I have in me?
Dude, you're the whitest of us all, Dan.
Yeah.
You're like almost clear.
Albino. Like,
I'm the new Halo 4 console.
Yeah.
So
we might as well just keep going.
As you guys have already heard, first up on the docket from HBO is Grim Brother 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Floridian.
For real. Born and raised, not many of us.
All right. Next on the line, we have Nevin Douglas, a.k.a. Cruel Legacy.
What's up, guys?
From Playtime.
Thanks for having me on, man.
Thanks for coming on. And finally, we have the young one, Dan Hamill, a.k.a. Green Skull.
You have
He's
no
in the room.
Ready up live.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on, man.
Thank you for coming on.
Sorry, I just wanted to be as cool as Nevin.
You keep trying there, don't you?
I try, man. I'll never get there.
You know, the height and the age, there's just, you're always going to fall a little short.
Yeah, worst case scenario, I'll always be able to pack on a few more pounds, so I'll outweigh you too.
Yeah.
At least you're taller than Jess. I mean,
well,
that's not saying much.
Yeah. So are grunt plushies.
Oh, poor Jess. She goes on vacation, and look what happens while she's away.
Just talk behind her back.
We'd have gotten a bulletin. I wouldn't have said anything.
Yeah. It happens. She knows it happens.
I know.
That's why she always hires us back. She can't keep us away for too long.
We did get a bulletin.
She hires us back because it's less work.
She doesn't. She just says she fires us, and then she gets the paperwork and is like, oh, I don't want to do that.
You're like,
So she's like, I'm just kidding. You guys are still working for me. Don't worry about it. Anyways, the real reason we are all here today is because these three gentlemen got a chance to go to Vancouver on the set of Halo 4 Forward Unto Dawn. And we're going to talk about some of that today. So there's been quite a few YouTube videos that these fine gentlemen have put out. They also did a podcast while they were in Vancouver with, who was the IGN guy that was there that you did it with?
Brandon Mirabella, the III.
The III.
The Triple I.
The Triple I. Triple I, Triple I.
Yeah, Fran, who runs, he heads up the entire video team at IGN. So it was really, that was to me like almost as special as the rest of the event, right? Just getting to hang out with him and
he was very cool.
Oh, absolutely.
Talk about how a guy with a great insight on gaming and on the industry in general, right? I mean, not many people in the kind of position he's in. So that was awesome.
Right. Especially with being one of the guys with the big companies are not, I mean, I don't know if consider IGN a company or a community, how it's kind of dual purpose at that point, but it's nice to see that, I guess, from your perspective, seeing the fervor in some of the guys that work for these bigger organizations.
Yeah.
Just the excitement light up to them when you get to know them on a personal level.
You know, it was really cool just having that, you know, the casual going for drinks together kind of thing, right? Like just being like, just treating it as a super casual thing. And it was, you know, I was completely honored to have him there, right? And to hear the same thing back from him, right? That he was so excited to be hanging out with us too, right? That was something.
Yeah, that was definitely very cool and really refreshing. You know, honor to hear kind of that stuff from him.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Because it's one of those things when you look at places like IGN, Kotaku, Joystick, you don't really get that one-on-one feeling that you just get with posts or videos that get put out. But for us, when we do a podcast and when our communities know us really well because they're familiar with the work that we do, it's a lot more, for lack of a better word, intimate. And we're comfortable with what each other say, and there's a lot of trust there. But once you get to a bigger site like that, some of that is kind of mystified. But it's nice to see that when you actually get the chance to talk to them one-on-one, there really is kind of the human side to them.
Definitely. And I think, you know, he was able to appreciate things in much the same ways that we did. And he was able to see things. Like, he's a guy in particular who, he's also come from the more grassroots fan community with, you know, he did a lot of work for, you know, a community site that was looking at Nintendo consoles. And he spent a lot of time studying the hardware specs behind the, you know, what was originally called the Dolphin. And so, you know, so he comes from a position and a situation very similar to all of us. So he's a guy who's really seen the whole picture in a lot of ways, right? Which was just very, very cool to get to talk to him and see his insight onto things too.
Right. Sure. Sweet. So let's dig into what Halo 4 Forward Unto Dawn actually is. So this is supposed to be a live action series that takes place about 30 years before all of the Halo events started. So this is about, so what, 25-25?
Yeah, about 25-30 years.
Okay. I mean, like, year 25-25, because Halo, yeah, no, the Halo events is 2052.
That's the ballpark, I believe, yeah.
So for those that have read the books, you know this is about the time when, shortly after, Halsey takes on the Spartans. She's developing the Spartans mainly to kind of serve as a dual purpose to fight off the Covenant forces that they've encountered, and fight off kind of this civil war between humanity. So there's these bunch of factions that are spread out across the galaxy, and the UNSC is trying to kind of combat that fat battle on the home front. Again, and then there's the Covenant they're balancing, and the Spartans are kind of spread out between the two. So as far as this is concerned, this story is kind of caught in between the two.
Yeah, and I mean, we don't know much about the details of the actual plot. I mean, a lot of what we saw when we were on location is stuff, it's the same information that everybody else has seen in the trailers that have been released since. But what I've gathered is that we're going to see the situation kind of transition throughout the course of Forward Unto Dawn. Like, I get the feeling that when this show starts, the Covenant aren't even really a thing yet as far as humanity is concerned. I mean, we don't know one way or the other if maybe there's been some limited contact that only very high-ranking people know about, or maybe there's been no contact and we actually get to see the first
wave. I wouldn't be surprised if it focused a little more up front, you know, on the insurrection. You know, if they mentioned what happens on Harvest and everything, because obviously that was the first world to, you know, to take that hit. And we don't even actually know, if I'm not mistaken, we don't know what planet this takes place on.
That's, I believe, correct. I don't think they've confirmed that yet.
No, I don't think they have.
And judging by the reaction, you know, and you see it in the trailer too, just judging by the reactions of the cadets when the Covenant arrives, I mean, they're obviously, you know, how old are these things, you know, and it's something that they're certainly not used to facing. So it certainly seems that if there is knowledge, it is probably very limited knowledge. Mm-hmm. So
now I didn't have a chance to go back and kind of read through or look through the first book, because there's some stories back there, and there's a couple places where it seems like this could be taking place, like the Epsilon Eridanus system is a candidate for something like this. But from what I heard on the Sparkcast, I think it was Sparkcast number 13, Tom Lasky, who is the main character in Forward Unto Dawn, he's kind of stuck in this struggle between growing up in a harsh kind of family environment and from the stuff that he's being taught with the stuff that they're being told about fighting off the insurrection. He has some uneasiness about that.
Yeah, he has reservations even just about the whole philosophy behind that current conflict. Yeah,
fighting against humanity when there's this looming threat. And I have a feeling that throughout this series, there's going to be a hard transition somewhere where the Covenant just comes swooping in, and that's going to basically change his view of the war. And I don't think we've seen this specifically, but does Ford into Dawn take place only in this time span that is 3 years before, or is there going to be like...
It jumps back and forth, right?
Yeah, because at the very end of the trailer, for example, you hear the Forward unto Dawn distress signal from Cortana, and that is, I believe, Lasky who answers and who says, play it again.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
So it does span that. Now, from what they were saying, it certainly seems like most of it will be taking place on the early era, but that it will lead up and kind of provide a fairly seamless transition to what's kind of going on with Halo 4. And there's also, I know, like an opening cinematic, not like an opening cinematic to the game itself, to Halo 4 itself, but I know that there's an opening, when we last left our heroes kind of thing, that 343 has before the Halo 3 campaign. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Forward Unto Dawn, the web series, merge real well with that kind of opening vignette.
And almost as like as well as they did with the E3 presentation, right? Where it's so conveniently went from that
from like live action to the gameplay,
from the commissioning.
Yeah, I think it would merge that seamlessly.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be very interesting to see just as a whole how it's handled, because it's the whole transmedia thing is not like new, but it's still very young. And video games are starting to do a lot of that. I mean, you see that in the Assassin's Creed series is one of my favorite series, and they have, live action films, they have animated films, they've got comics and graphic novels, they've got, standard novels, they've got the games that, and you've got that, obviously, that history with Halo as well. So it'll be really interesting. And I've always kind of thought that doing a Band of Brothers / Battlestar Galactica, style long-term series, to me, would actually be better, more desirable, even just as a fan, than a movie. Mainly because I know that, when the movie's done, it's kind of done, but like a series has a lot of potential to really go on. And to me, the Halo universe is so deep, and there's so many stories that you can tell, and it has so many idiosyncrasies and so many assets as well. I would love to see something like long term where, some episodes you're seeing, warthogs, and another episode you might see a fleet of hornets or some falcons or
shower sequence.
Elephant, so like all over the place. So it would be really, really cool. Some vultures or something like that to see. So I mean, I'm already looking forward to see, after all the post production is done and the series is going, I would love to see, off in the distance in the Forward Unto Dawn web series, seeing like a vulture or some hornets or falcons or something. Just and Frank and Kevin alluded to that when we were doing the interviews with them. That one of the coolest things about it is just seeing the stuff in the Halo universe in the games and in the fiction be realized. And obviously, a lot of that in post-production would be CGI anyway, but it still has that element of being, all live action and seeing something that's more real than necessarily an in-game asset.
Yeah, I think the way Frank described it was that seeing the elements of the Halo universe in real life, there's a real powerful charisma to it.
Yeah.
And I agree with him. I think that there's something about seeing, like, even something as simple as, we got to have some literal hands-on time with the model assault rifle that they're using. And it's very, very cool. It's a lot cooler than you'd think it would be to hold a model gun from a video game, but there's something about the detail, the weight, the just the look and the
just feels right.
I think
weight being a big thing too, absolutely, right? Like as soon as that goes in your hands, you're like, whoa, like this is a weapon.
It's I think the catch is, I think that in a lot of cases, I mean, that's true when you're in the room and you're seeing this stuff in person. The trick is whether or not they're able to communicate that through the screen. And I think some movies or TV shows or film projects have done that more successfully than others in the past. What we've seen so far from the trailer, I think they're pulling it off pretty well. I mean, I think that when you see that Warthog drive by, it looks pretty cool. And not just in that, oh, I'm a fan of the video games and it's cool to see it in real life kind of way, but in that it's just a cool image. It's got the design works and the lighting works, and I think they're pulling it off based on what we've seen so far. So
you make a good point too about the difference of the in life and on screen. Even just when we were there, you know, we were watching a couple of the scenes we filmed, and we would watch and be like, man, that looks really, really cool. But even still thinking like, it'll be interesting to see how this translates. And then, you know, they pull us into the little green room area and sit us down and in front of the monitors and are showing what the cameras are capturing. And this is without any post-production or any effects on it.
Yeah, this is the live footage stream. Right.
Yeah, it was amazing, even the transformation just there. Just going from, you know, when you, instead of having every possible angle, when you go to the angle that the director wants you to see and the real true vision, basically, of the, you know, of the story. It's not unlike, in all honesty, it's not unlike, you know, we experience the Halo universe primarily behind the visor of Chief. And it is a very different experience, kind of knowing and passingly knowing the Halo fiction and some of the extra stuff, but it is a very different experience when you're behind that visor and with that perspective. And so when we were kind of locked in and honed in on what the directors and the producers really wanted to show and wanted to tell, it was amazing, like, even, you know, how much better it came across. But there is nothing, like you said, there's nothing like kind of holding a piece of that universe. You know, rather than holding a controller in your hands, you're holding the actual weapon that you're controlling. You know, like, it's super sick. And, yeah, there's a weightiness to it that you can't get across in a game. And there's a...
Probably just nerd out
to it. There's a functionality that adds so much to it.
Well, and right. my hope is that having the props and you know, the Master Chief's armor and the vehicles, having all that stuff so fully realized, my hope is that affects the actors the way it affected us when we're there seeing it. Because I would imagine, I mean, with absolutely zero experience as an actor, but I would imagine that it's one thing to sort of rehearse these scenes and say the lines and run through it in your head, but when you're wearing the armor with that assault rifle in your hand, you'd have to stand a little different. You'd have to, like, it has to affect you, I would think, and hopefully in a way that just helps sell the whole thing, that helps the viewer buy into the believability of the whole thing, right? Because if the actors believe it, hopefully that'll come across.
Right. That brings up an interesting point, though. So, and we'll get to this a little later, but it's going to be interesting to see how Master Chief is portrayed. With, I mean, you have Daniel Cudmore. He's a big dude, he fills the role of being a Spartan pretty well, but movement's going to be one of those issues where it's like, okay, how much is this going to look like the game versus, okay, I can really only move this fast because I'm not superhuman or anything. So that's
it's all in the neck.
Is it now?
No, I'm not kidding. It's really funny. There's a I think it's, you know, I mean, it's like a forum avatar that I see the picture a lot. But there's a picture of Chief from the Starry Night trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And it has him looking up. It's that real kind of famous part where he looks up like toward the Wraith mortar shot that's coming in.
Right.
And you see the armor and you see, you know, the bodysuit that comes up underneath. And for some reason, it always struck me as just like it was just a cool pose. It was a very there was a sense of fictional realism.
Yeah, you know what's funny about that is that it just made me think of that scene in Star Wars where Luke looks up at those two suns.
Yeah.
That just rang out in my head, right? Because he doesn't say a word. But that's such a hard-hitting scene because you know exactly what's going on. You know what he's thinking, right?
Just, yeah.
Like, look upwards says so much.
Yeah, and it's funny when Cudmore walked out or when we went out to see him like in better lighting, basically when he was in full armor, he looked like kind of up for something, and I saw all of that bodysuit, you know, come up and go up under the neck, and it was like
it looks sick,
perfect. It was so perfect. And it was something, you know, like sometimes you'll see and immense props to all the guys at 405th for everything they do. So this is not a knock on anything. But like it is the difference maybe between like a more simple homemade costume, you know, mm-hmm. like if you were to make a helmet and use a turtleneck instead.
Right.
And put the helmet on. But when we saw it in there, and again, you know, Legacy has a gazillion dollars to do this. But I don't know, just the way that it looked was so very real looking and so very believable.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a little detail. I was kind of surprised at some of the tiny details that made the biggest impact. And even one of them being proportionally, you know, when we were talking to the guy from Legacy, he talked about how you have to change certain things on the human model because physics don't work the same way as in a game, and mainly from a graphical perspective. Like if the shoulder armor is up too high, you know, you can't have clipping in real life. You know, like you have to be able to move in a certain way. You have to, you know, the armor pieces have to fit together in a certain way. And it was interesting because like you see it in the game, that's kind of what you get used to. And it looks right, quote unquote, because that's what you're used to. But then you see it on a real human, all of a sudden that looks more correct because it's become kind of like justified in your brain. You look at it and you're like, wait a second, a real human can wear that. They can wear something like that. It does look correct. And some of those little minute changes they made just for the sake of practical proportions made a huge difference in the overall, even visual feel of the piece. So mm-hmm. I really think that, you know, obviously you see it in some of the footage in the trailers, but I'm super excited about seeing it in full motion with everything involved and all in context as well. I think it will blend really, really well. You know, as much as a 7-foot super soldier can blend.
Well, I mean, it's the green armor, it's supposed to be kind of camouflage like, so
there you go,
it should blend.
Will it blend?
That is the question.
Exactly.
Oh boy,
man, I love Chick-fil-A sweet tea. I'm sorry, it is delicious.
Controversy.
So I guess while we're on the topic, how is it like to see him just move in the suit?
It's scary. If I could take a chance to answer that one
first, I have to look up so much.
Yeah, well, it's you know, you hear about in all the interviews that he's talking about that, you know, he steps into the room and everyone looks at him differently, and it is like that. When he first – because he kind of came in as a surprise. We knew he was going to step into the room at some point. We knew we were going to check out the armor. We didn't really know specifically when, so we were there in the green room, and sure enough, door opens up. People come in. We're like, you know, what's going on? Something new's happening, right? Sure enough, he steps in, and it's just whoa, right? Like you just feel this wave of everybody stopping what they're doing and just looking up this super intimidating guy. And, like, we went to do a little photo shoot with him. And
a little bit of pee came out.
Yeah, he was walking behind us. And I wanted to walk faster because he was right behind me, and I'm like, oh god, he's gonna step on me.
Jessica was kind of freaking out because of that, and we were purposely walking slow in front of her, and she's like, guys, speed up. We're like, what, Jet? We're talking. We're having a conversation. He's right behind me, and I was like, I know. I mean, his belt was right behind her. So
yeah, I was saying he's probably twice as tall as she is in that suit.
It was actually super super funny, the juxtaposition of her with him like there in full armor. She was adorable to watch because she's, you know, and it was really cool actually, and we absolutely love Jessica to death. I mean, just as a human being, Halo notwithstanding, it was neat to see even someone like herself. You were kind of reminded that like she was a fan first.
Oh yeah,
like she straight up hid the first time. like the actor came in and she had all of a sudden developed teleportation powers. Like straight up vanished, and it was really funny. Like you could see him, and when he came in armor, she was just like, oh, hello. Like, it was just so funny because you could tell, like, she was super kind of geeking out over it, which is awesome.
Definitely put, like, sometimes you forget, right, that it's these kind of figures in our community. You know, she is one of the faces of 343, right? And to realize that, holy crap, you know, she was and is one of us, right? She's just a fan who loves Halo, who is, you know, puts on pants one leg at a time, right? it's really interesting.
Yep. It's just one of those nice things to see that people really do care that are making the game.
I think
one of the reasons why Halo is so successful. It's because you have people that are dedicated into making the game that we all want to play.
Well, it's something that I was talking about this with, I recorded a show just last week with a gentleman by the name of Christian Spicer. And we were talking about this idea of, like, you know, at what point does, you know, how resilient is the Halo franchise? At what point does it start to feel dialed in, you know, the way some people might accuse the Call of Duty series of sort of transforming into a given that the game is going to come out and it's going to be a certain way, and, you know, not to take anything away from the unbelievable passion and hard work of the people on the dev team, but there is a certain, you sort of know what to expect every single time to a certain degree. And so we were trying to, you know, talk about, well, you know, how does Halo avoid that going forward? And I was theorizing that at least for right now at the moment, I think that the Halo franchise is in the best shape it could possibly be in, because, you know, you had Bungie who deserves all the credit in the world for creating this amazing franchise and making it what it is and being the passionate fans that they are. But there comes a time where, you know, the studio had been making the same franchise for over 10 years. And I would guess that, you know, when they were making Reach, as much as they were completely in love with Halo and really excited to be doing it and putting all these cool ideas into it, I'm sure that there was at least some people on the team who were sort of like, oh, I've got this other really cool idea that I want to work on as well. And, you know, I've got all these other things burning in my mind. And
some people probably just ran out of steam as well.
Yeah. And so, but
it's like we've been working on Halo for so long.
Yeah. And right now with 343, I mean, they have the advantage of being in this position where every single person in that building knew exactly what they were getting into when they started there, right? Like, they're all there because they want to make Halo. And, you know, 10 years from now, it's going to be a challenge to maintain that. Like, how do you maintain that passion and that drive and that enthusiasm over the course of time? But right now, this is a fresh team of people who all want to be doing Halo more than anything else in the world. And I think, I mean, that makes me really excited just thinking about it, right? What are these people gonna be able to do with that much enthusiasm?
Yeah, absolutely, right? It's one of those things that it makes me frustrated when I hear people, you know, you always got the haters who say, you know, it's not Bungie, so Halo's gonna suck, right? And I've always thought from the start, that, you know, why would it suck? Because, you know, like you said, you have this team who they want the game for themselves, right? Like, they're making it how they want it. It's not some company that's going, hey, let's force this out there. You know, we have someone breathing down our necks. We got to get this out. It's everyone who is, just wants to make an incredible game. And because of that, I know Halo 4 is going
to
be amazing.
Well, it partly sounds like rampant naivety to – it almost like it kind of makes it sound like you're saying that Bungie's the only good developer out there.
Yeah.
Like, if Naughty Dog made a Halo game, it might be awesome. Like, and again, I you know, I know you can get it. We can get into the semantics of like, oh, well, would it feel like Halo, or, you know, da, da, da. What I'm saying is good developers are good developers. And, yeah, you know, yes, there are going to be artistic differences and, you know, philosophy differences on what makes it good and not. But I mean, you know, 343 Microsoft spent a lot of time assembling a team at 343 that is full of people that meet two main requirements. They're really good at what they do, and they really wanted to make Halo. And, you know, like Dan, like you said, you know, it's a great point that, like, you know, a lot of times you may work for a developer and decisions are made above your pay grade that you're going to be working on a game you didn't necessarily want to be working on or know you'd be working on, or, you know.
So when you're
everybody there knew they were getting into Halo and, you know, and wants to be there. They were there for that reason.
It's a common thing among developers to go into crunch time, right? So that you'll be spending so many hours overnight, right? People will be leaving the office. You'll be the last one there still working on stuff. And if it's not something you're passionate about, that would just be excruciating. And, you know, you can relate it to so many things in life. Any kind of job you can think of that you really weren't a fan of, that, you know, the further it goes on, the longer you have to stay there, the more you're like, this really sucks. But if it's something you're passionate about, you're like, screw it, you know, I'll stay here for a week. I just want to get this done, right? Like, I love this. I just want to keep making it as good as I can make it. So people will put those extra hours in because of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good to know, though, that there's a lot of people here or at 343 that are either fans or were part of Bungie before, and then there's another group that weren't necessarily part of Halo before, but they're really, really looking forward to doing something with Halo. Like, they have a vision for Halo.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's something that, sort of to bring it back full circle, I mean, this started with us sort of, you know, talking about Jessica's reaction to seeing the Master Chief. But, you know, I could see it on Frank O'Connor and Kevin Grace's faces, you know, when they're watching the footage. And I mean, they were definitely there to work. I mean, they were observing and you could tell that they were looking at everything with a critical eye, but you could still see that just excitement over, like, every now and then you'd catch one of them, you know, either looking at the other or just having an expression on their face of like, how freaking cool is this, you know?
Exactly.
And, it's just very, very reassuring to see both for the future of Forward Unto Dawn in particular and the Halo franchise in general. You know, this is exactly the kind of people that we want to have at the helm of this.
Uh-huh. Definitely. And I think the people that are at the studio right now are the ones that the game is in good hands with.
And so, I've said it before, too. Like, I think it's best of both worlds because, you know, we get more Halo from 343 and from people who are very passionate about it. And you know, we get another 10 years and we get to have a turning point to avoid maybe the franchise getting more stale if it wasn't kind of changing hands. And then we also get new Bungie stuff. We get, you know, they as creators get to stretch their legs and as artists get to, you know, be creative again with a clean slate. And really, I think this whole situation is a win-win for anybody who is fans of both the franchise and the, you know, the developers.
Right. All right, well, let's get back on topic and move on to some other stuff.
Sure.
So, Daniel Cudmore is the guy who plays Master Chief in this, and another role he's been known for is Colossus from X-Men. So we know he's a pretty good dude. What was it like to see him act out Chief? Like, was there any particular parts that he kind of made Chief unique in his own perspective, and how How did it feel as seeing him as the Chief? Did he actually feel like Chief that we know from the games?
Well, definitely, if nothing else, because of his size. I mean, and because you don't see him, you know, you don't see his face. So, like, he really pulled off that imposing figure.
I'd like to add, we never actually saw him act in the suit.
Yeah, okay. We should clarify that. We didn't get to see him. Like, he wasn't there in costume to do any filming when we were there. He was there literally just to show us the suit, right? But we, you know, having said that, we did get to see him. Even something as simple, and this is going to sound silly, but even something as simple as walking down the hallway.
Yeah.
You see the movement. You see his posture. You see the way he tilts his head. And it all looked, you know, for lack of a better term, it just looked right to me. It just felt right and looked right, and I believed he was the Master Chief, like, no question.
Yeah,
for
sure.
All right. Another question that I think people may have, or at least this is something in my mind, but when they voice Master Chief, does Daniel Cudmore do the voicing, or do they have Steve Downes do voiceover?
Neither. Actually, that was kind of a big point of contention is not the right word. Well, it was on the forums. But it was just a big point of emphasis was they actually tried out. We talked to Frank and Kevin about it. They tried having Steve do the voice, but Chief is way younger in this than he is, and there's no way you can get Steve Downes to sound 20 younger. Something years
yeah,
younger. In fact, they actually tried digitally to do it, and they said it sounded stupid. Like, they
really?
Actually had Steve do the lines, some of the lines, and they tried to digitally manipulate it to make him sound younger, and they said it sounded absolutely awful. So they went with a voice sound-alike, a younger sound-alike.
Did they now, Devin? Or Nevin?
Sorry. Yeah, they should have brought me on board. I could have pulled that off. But.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't. I mean, we were lobbying, you know. He kept walking around saying things like, "I need a coffee," you know, but they didn't catch on. So.
Nope.
Where are the tacos?
Yeah.
Where are the tacos?
But yeah, and so I'm totally fine with that, because, you know, Chief is much, much younger, and it would seem really out of place to all of a sudden hear Steve Downes, you know, grizzled voice kind of come through when really Chief's in high school. Like,
yeah, I think it's going to be, I think it's a change that makes sense. And, you know, I think the only reason people are flipping out a little bit is that, you know, most people have only ever heard the one person do the voice of Master Chief, but there are, you know, so many big important characters across all forms of film and TV who have been played by different actors or voiced by different actors at one point or another. And you get used to it. You deal with it. You know, it's really not that big a deal in the long run. It might jar you the very first time you hear it and you go, "Oh, that sounds a little different." But after 30 seconds, you'll forget about it and you'll get over it and move on.
And the joy of Master Chief, right, is honestly, no matter what voice he has, it's a giant green suit of armor, right? You're not having a different face. It's literally Master Chief. Like, that's something that you're not going to get wrong, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
I just try to fill every awkward silence. It goes more than 1.7 seconds.
Yeah.
1.17
well,
seconds.
Well, the awkward silence gets stripped out anyways, so.
Yeah.
That's lame.
It's called after, like.
Wait, do you strip out my yes?
No, I just strip out silence.
Well, then yeah. I'm just going to start saying it all the time.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Yeah.
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 It's now a new punctuation.
Yeah.
I have a bad feeling about this.
So, I know you guys asked him some questions, and you guys have videos out there. If everyone who's listening hasn't seen their videos yet, make sure you check out their YouTube channels. They are, what's yours, Jeff? I forget what yours is.
Well, mine is actually the Grimm Brothers TV.
Okay, yeah, that one, yeah. Okay, so his is Grimm Brothers TV. Nevin's is Nevin Douglas.
Yeah, then... although I should say most of my videos aren't actually on YouTube yet. I'm thinking about putting them on YouTube.
Yeah, because you only have one up there.
Yeah, I've only got one on YouTube.
Same for Jeff.
The rest are exclusively on my site. They're just embedded right onto my website, crewlegacyproductions.com. So I'll probably be putting shorter versions up onto YouTube sometime in the next couple of weeks, because you know, some of the videos I posted were a bit long. You know, there's the interview with Anna Popowell. It's the complete video unedited, so it's like 20 minutes long. I'll probably put edited versions on YouTube, just so if people want a more condensed version, they'll be able to get it. But
and to clarify, mine is the Grimm Brothers TV. I didn't just to make sure.
Okay. And then Green Skulls is Ready Up Live.
Yeah.
So if you guys haven't seen them yet, pause this podcast now. Go watch them. Come back and listen.
Do it.
So for Daniel, how is it for him playing Master Chief? I know in the interviews he's been a Halo fan for a while, but how is it like from his perspective to play as Chief?
Said it was a big responsibility.
Yeah, he says that a lot, but he definitely told us it was exactly the vibe we got off it. Like, it's pretty much what you'd expect. That he says, you know, it's you know, you're a normal actor or whatever. And then as soon as you put on that suit, you're Master Chief, right? Like instantly, as soon as that helmet goes on, you are this super soldier. Because again, everyone's head turns. You're suddenly this huge imposing beast, and everyone even like. Talks to him, like, again, like we said before, just even like knowing, you know, there's no acting going on, it was weird interacting with this giant green suited man, right? Like it was
right,
like, in a good way though. Like it was like, oh wow, this is Master Chief right in front of us, right?
It's like, I mean, this is my hero come to life.
Yeah. He says he felt that he feels everyone else around. He said he felt that, like, as soon as the helmet goes on, that suddenly, you know, he's this important figure.
He's intimidating the crap out of everyone.
Because that's exactly the feeling that you get when you're playing the games and reading the books. So it's cool that effect translates to reality in some way.
It hit me really hard, and I mentioned that on the podcast that we recorded in Vancouver, that, you know, we were walking down this long hallway with him, and you see everybody, crew, other actors... Everybody stops and just turns and watches them go by, and it's exactly like what happens when you're playing the games and you walk down a hall and all the Marines stop and look up at you and take notice. They nailed it, right? It's amazing. It makes you appreciate what an amazing touch that is to have in the games in the first place, because it's such a realistic reaction to seeing this 7 foot tall super soldier walk by. Right.
Right.
And then it makes you realize that they got the suit right. And they got the right guy in the suit because he draws that same reaction out of people. It was very, very cool.
That suit looks fantastic.
Yeah.
By the way, I mean, I the picture that we saw, or the initial promo pic for the Forge of Dawn, looked pretty sweet. I thought at first it was like a CG cut for that picture, but then seeing when we saw the actual trailer for it, it's like, no, that's the real thing. It's like, wow, they put a lot of good detail into that, and they did a fantastic job.
Oh, yeah.
And the underlying suit, I mean, wow. That looks like it almost comes straight out of like Halo 2 or Halo 3.
Yeah. It's very, very cool. Very, very well done.
So, but yeah, kudos to him for playing the role and being 7 feet tall in that outfit. I heard on the Sparkcast that they actually had to make another inner suit because he wore out the first one that they made.
Yeah, that's what we saw him in was his backup. Yeah, because just is a testament to how mobile he is. Like, he was doing so much running and jumping and in the action sequences that he just tore the inner suit to pieces. He blew it out, and they had to make him a new one. So, you know, that's what I like to hear.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, that you would think for a suit that they wear the whole time that they would account for something like that.
Well, I guess to a certain degree,
I'm kidding.
They don't. But also, I guess, I mean, they
that's being facetious.
They don't also maybe they also don't necessarily. plan on that level of mobility for most of these types of costumes, right? Or maybe they do, and they build they usually build lots of spares, and we just don't hear about
it. There's obviously a leak in this hydrostatic gel layer.
You hope that's a leak.
All right, so the main character, let's move on to him, is Thomas Lasky, played by Tom Green.
Mm-hmm. Not that Tom Green.
Yeah, different Tom Green.
Daddy, would you like some sausage?
So, we haven't seen him much. His big film today, according to IMDb, was Dance Academy.
Yep.
So, he's a fairly new face to movie making in general. And what was it like to see him play as the main character? Basically to portray someone like a Marine in the Halo universe and then his encounters with Chief. How did that play out?
He was definitely dedicated. You know, even from the interviews and watching him act and stuff, he was absolutely into the role, which is something that the vibes right away, even before talking to him. Because we actually had quite a bit of time to hang out and chat with him. We had lunch with him and stuff. You know, he was very passionate about his role, and that's really like what is the most important part of having that main role.
Right.
Yeah, I definitely.
Yeah.
Yes, as Dan said, he was very, very enthusiastic and invested in the role. I mean, he definitely, you could see that he was aware of just how important it was and what a big deal it was. I really like what we've seen of him so far and how he's portraying his character. I think he's bringing, you know, a good level of, I mean, it's hard to say seriousness without sounding totally cheesy, but I think what we've seen in the trailer does a good job of communicating how conflicted he is at the moment of Forward Unto Dawn. You know, for reasons that we've gone over already, that he doesn't necessarily buy into this war against the insurrectionists, and he has a lot of problems with the training he's being given and what he's being taught. And
if I can interject real quick in there too, I also got the feeling that because of his lineage, he was having some issues with that as well. It's,
yes,
kind of like this predestination thing of, this is what the family does, this is who you are. You know, his brother is an ODST. It's, you know, like, oh, this is not even necessarily, like, more of like an addition to the reason that the war is being fought in the first place, but uh-huh. Just the fact that it's expected of him to just fall right in line, both, you know, literally and figuratively, you know, as if he has no choice in this matter. And so I think right. That's where his character is going to do some growing too, is that when there is this threat and there is no other choice in the matter, that he maybe really does find where he fits into that.
Yeah. So obviously we're getting some kind of backstory into his family. How extensive is that going to be
like
a part of this?
Well, I honestly don't know. I think they're going to give us enough information to understand the basics behind his dilemma, but I don't know how much of it we're going to see, how much of it we're going to witness on screen. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, they've shown little bits in the trailer of you know, him talking to his brother, I believe, over a chat, right? So
Brody ST.
Yeah, well, Brody ST.
Wow.
Sorry. I've never heard that before.
It's never been said before.
Okay, someone go to GoDaddy, BrodyST.com. Get that right now.
Yeah, BrodyST is canon.com.
Oh, that's good stuff. So yeah, I don't know how much time they're going to spend on it, because on the one hand, I mean, this is going to be, I think, a fairly intimate story overall, maybe a little more intimate than some people are expecting, but it's also not that long, right? I mean, we're expecting a total of what, maybe 90 minutes in the extended cut, right? So they don't necessarily have a ton of time to spend on anything that's not, you know, really, really critical to the moving the plot forward.
Yeah.
Wow, now Green Skull has caught on to it. Okay.
Great.
You say that like this it's is... bad.
Well. Yeah. Anyways. So another popular actress that is in this movie, which I'm sure everyone knows about, is Anna Pompliwell, and she is known for her role in the Chronicles of Narnia movies. So she plays the role of Schuyler. I'm assuming it's
Schuyler Silva.
Schuyler Silva. We don't get, or at least from the videos I watched of you guys, we don't get much of backstory for her. So what role does she play in Ford Unto Dawn?
Well, what we know so far is that she's she is in some way sort of the counterpoint to a character like Thomas Lasky, whereas, you know, Lasky is skeptical about their role, the role of their military in the war. She has very much bought into it, right? She believes it's the right thing to do. She believes in their cause and what they're being trained for. So, and of course, I mean, we've even seen in the trailer that they obviously, you know, begin to develop some form of a relationship together. So that's going to be, a form of maybe tension between them, or if not tension, some form of, like, they're going to be influencing each other, I would say. I mean, that's just speculation on my part, but I think it's safe to say that they're going to be showing each other a different perspective on what they're going through.
All right. So there's a pretty deep connection there, or is it just kind of something like a friendship that develops during the storyline?
Well, we see them in the trailer. They're about to make out when the damn Covenant attacks, so what a cock block, eh?
All right. Yeah, that kind of sucks for him.
I would go to war with the Covenant after that.
Just so you guys know, we edited out about 5-minute section before recording. Starting back on this one. So, but yeah. It's... What was it? I mean, we have a bunch of actors that aren't as well known. Daniel Cudmore, it's like, yeah, we've seen him in a few places, but he's not really one of the more popular.
There's Colossus in X-Men. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
He was something in Twilight. That's all I know, though.
Yeah,
that's
he's also in Twilight, cool. But who watches Twilight?
Yeah.
Really?
Nobody who's going to admit it right now.
They're going to go watch Twilight now just because of this.
Yeah.
Just because he's in this...
You know, I actually kind of really liked the fact that a lot of the actors and actresses weren't well known. I think a lot of times you get that where you suffer from, you try to see the universe, but really all you're seeing is that specific actor. I have a really hard time, and I know there's a lot of fans of him out there, but I have a really hard time watching anything these days with Johnny Depp in it, because it's... It's turned into, oh, yep, that's the character he plays. That's Johnny Depp. It's like, oh, Alice in Wonderland, right. Johnny Depp is in there. And the Pirates of the Caribbean, Johnny Depp's in there. And so it's you start to get taken out of it. I think one of the charms of the original Star Wars films was that you had very few people that had real big star power. I mean, Billy Dee Williams and Harrison Ford, you know, with American Graffiti to a certain extent, but really not much. And that's so you were able to see it and really believe, you know, now poor Mark Hamill can't get away from being Luke Skywalker. Yeah. But that's good for us and not him, so that's okay.
Right.
You know, and so I'm glad that when you see the cast and when you see this group of cadets, that you're not all looking at the current teen heartthrobs or the hot new actors and actresses as far as, like, you know, the real well knowns and stuff like that. I mean,
yeah.
The people that they have, you know, Tom and Kat, you know, I mean, we're really just everybody there are great choices. You know, it's you at least alleviate some of that barrier between getting to know the characters and seeing them as pieces of the Halo universe and not as actors who are kind of playing a role in the Halo universe.
Right. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree.
I would think it would be better to have a lot more people that are smaller or not as well known. do something like this. I think it kind of opens some doors. Because if you go big production style, then people are going to expect a lot more out of something. And this isn't supposed to be some huge production that they're trying to put on. This is supposed to be something that kind of digs into a different part of the Halo storyline. And just kind of explores a different part of the universe. And there's this discussion, and I know we've had this on the show, and I'm sure you guys have talked about it, but there's always this fear that with a Halo movie, if you want to do it for the fans, like the true hardcore fans, you're going to want to do it with a side story that's not necessarily involved with the games and not necessarily involved with the Chief. You're going to want some different aspect of the universe explained. Except if you do it for, if you want to attract an audience that is not necessarily big into Halo, but you want them to kind of expand on that, you're going to want Chief, you're going to want to be very story-centric around the Spartans and what is closely related to the game.
I've always thought ODSTs would be a surefire way to make a movie, to be honest. The ODST shorts and stuff, because they're badass. Anyone can relate. Like, anyone who likes a war flick will love ODSTs, right? Like, it's just a future war. I think that'd be a way to go.
Well, I agree. And you don't have to worry about there only being a certain number of them.
Yeah.
And the point I was getting to is, what Forward Unto Dawn is doing almost seems like the perfect balance, because you're getting a story that is Chief, like there's Chief in there. It's not quite Chief centric, but Chief is in the story. And you're also getting a story that's somewhat related to the story in the games, but it's another aspect of the Halo universe. So this is almost like a perfect balance of the two.
Well, one of the treatments that was written as far for a movie, I think it was the one that Alex Garland wrote, was you know, similarly style, where it was actually about a group of Marines with the Chief, and the Chief was in it, but he wasn't the center of it. What's interesting is I feel like by doing it this way, the Chief is made to be almost more ethereal and powerful, because we're not spending every second with him. It is like he comes in and there's such a contrast between him and the rest of the people in there that it makes it huge. And it's funny, it's like even down to who they picked to be their actors, all of the cadets are all small framed people, just even in real life.
Yeah.
So seeing them next to the Chief, like, just makes the Chief, just drives that point home of the, you know, even just visually, that the Spartans were literally head and shoulders above the, you know, the other humans that were around them.
There's a great moment in the trailer, and this I'm going to be doing a I'm going to be releasing a video sometime in the next week or two where I'm going to go through the whole trailer and sort of freeze frame moments and slow stuff down and put some commentary over it. But one of my favorite shots in the entire trailer is there's just a brief glimpse. It's in the forest at night, and there's explosions going on in the background, and you see the Chief and a bunch of the other cadets running sort of single file through the woods, and you see the Chief in front of them, and he looks like almost literally twice as tall as all the other cadets behind him, and it goes by really quick. It's a really quick shot, but if you sort of like freeze frame that and look at it, it's a really powerful image when you realize it's not a Lord of the Rings style alteration to the size of the characters. He is legitimately for real that much bigger than these people, and it's something as simple as that really hammers home the iconic status of the character, the legendary status of the character. Going back to what you were saying just a moment ago, Jeff, I think that the challenge with a Halo movie and the challenge with Master Chief as a character is very similar to the challenge that other filmmakers face trying to tell stories about a character like Superman, which is that for some people, and everybody's going to have different feelings on this, but for some people, you know, myself personally, Superman is not interesting. I do not find anything remotely interesting about Superman.
Nobody tell Sin Cartha.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but I'm I still think stories with Superman in it can be deeply fascinating because of how he affects everybody else around him.
Yeah.
And I personally see the Master Chief in a very similar way. I will say I think there's a lot of room for interesting growth and character development and storytelling in the sort of formative years of this type of character. But you sort of do get to a point where once he's established, he's sort of locked in place as far as who he is, and you almost can't change him too much without completely throwing away what the character is supposed to represent. I'm going to be really curious to see how 343 handles that with the Master Chief going forward. How do they develop him without changing, you know, who the Master Chief is? I think that, back to your point, I think that Forward Unto Dawn is taking a really smart approach by, you know, focusing on the way others react to the Master Chief. How do you, you know, how do you throw this larger than life person in with all these kids, and what does that do to them? How does that influence them? Does it inspire them? Does it scare them? Does it, you know, there's that, you mentioned Justin Korthoff. He had that great line when we were at PAX East, and he was talking about, you know, when Lex Luthor looks at Superman, it pisses him off because nothing mankind can ever accomplish matters if Superman exists.
Yeah.
And is because, no, like, mankind can work for centuries and finally go to the moon, and Superman can do it in 5 minutes, you know, on a right. whim. And so are we going to see cadets looking at Master Chief going, well, how can I possibly matter next to this guy?
Well, we've seen
nothing
that
I can ever
fiction.
Do will ever be like this, right?
We've seen that in the fiction. I mean, there are a lot of times where it was one of actually the really one of the neat parts about the Flood, for all of its faults that, you know, people don't like, you know, but there were some great interactions between specifically the ODSTs, and they had an interesting perspective because they always had been like that step up. You know, you had your Marines, but then you had the ODSTs, and the ODSTs were the badasses, and now you've got these Spartans, and they kind of look at them like, man, that's like cheating. Like, they always took it. They're just built, but, you know, we're regular humans going above and beyond. We're regular humans doing amazing things, so you do see that attitude, and you know, I think it actually does liken pretty well to like what you were saying and what Justin had said about, you know, Lex's attitude towards Superman. And what's funny is it's not Superman's fault. Like, Superman, he's not doing anything wrong, you know, but it's still there. That rivalry and relationship is still there.
All right. I didn't remember that conversation unless I was paying attention to a different conversation. There were lots of conversations going on at that table.
We needed traffic lights.
Well, we had how many people in there? About 20, 24?
Something like that.
It was a blast. And we'll probably do it again at PAX Prime.
Yeah, we'll all be staying at Rakizel's place.
Ah.
Yeah.
Gonna crash every night.
Room for how many?
you're missing a zero, right? You mean 80, right? Is that
yeah?
Okay,
something
okay.
Like that.
Okay, fire code. Nah, who cares about fire code? So the director behind Forward Unto Dawn is Stuart Hendler,
mm-hmm.
and I certainly haven't heard of him before. What has he directed?
Sorority Row.
Okay, yeah, that. Okay, so that was the only one I have remotely heard of.
I could be mistaken, but I was you know, looking through his IMDb. He doesn't have many like directing credits. He's directed a few other smaller projects, but he has lots of either you know, producer or
short film entries,
assistant director credits, or things like that, right? So this definitely seems to be something that he's not new to, but he seems to be an up and coming director from what I can tell. So
how is it like to see him direct something that's this near and dear to our hearts?
what seems pretty near and dear to his, which is one of our first concerns. I mean, he talked about it, and he was, you know, he said that some of the, you know, the people that he looked up to the most were people who had worked on Halo in live action capacities before. And, you know, he didn't name names, but one could kind of assume that he's talking about people like Peter Jackson and Neil Blomkamp. And so he knows that he has some pretty big shoes to fill, even with just who's worked on the franchise before in this capacity. But he also has – he knows he has big expectations. And maybe sometimes it's good. Like, in all honesty, I'd rather have him working on it than Michael Bay. Because
that's true,
you know,
that's true.
and he kind of specializes in things that have a bit of a horror element, which Halo actually does. If you don't think so, people need to read the Mona Lisa or watch the motion comic on Waypoint. There's definitely some kind of horror type aspects of it. But one of the things that makes a horror film good is the interactions between the characters and how they're dealing with the situation. And I think that's where he's going to show a lot of his strengths. There was a really good podcast, actually, one of the latest Sparcasts. They were talking about him at 343 and saying that he's also just a really, really – he's efficient. He's not into like a lot of fluff with things. He really has a good, strong idea about what he wants to see, and is really good at getting the best out of the people that are around him. And that's, you know, you have to do that to be a good director. So
right.
Maybe it will help that he doesn't come from this long laundry list of sci-fi epics, because either A, we're not going to be comparing it to a gazillion other things, being like, oh, it's just like this, oh, it's just like this. And B, he's not going to try to shoehorn a bunch of stuff from things he's already done into it.
Right, yeah. That was going to be the other thing.
If he had just come from doing Avatar and Prometheus and War of the Worlds.
And District 9.
And, you know, I might be a little worried that he's just going to try to take, oh, well, those things worked in this, and I'm just going to make I'm going to make this fit into Halo when maybe it's not supposed to.
Right. So how much interaction was there between him and Frankie and Kevin kind of directing the whole thing? Like, was Stewart basically directing everything? Was he basically given the reins to do whatever he wants? Or how involved was Frankie and Kevin in this whole ordeal?
Well, you let talented people be talented. I mean,
right.
As far as the you kind of have to parcel out the responsibility there, because as far as a director goes, Frank and Kevin are not directors. They're not film directors, and they know that, and they stated that. You know, you let those people, you put those people in the positions that they're in for a reason. Otherwise, why have them there? You know, so they were very happy to let him show his strengths. But by the same token, Stewart does not know the ins and outs of and you know, even down to what every character is maybe thinking or their backstory. You know, he doesn't have that intimacy with the universe that Frank and Kevin are going to. So it really is a combination of making sure that there's a synergy there. You know, you have to let the people who are good at doing film do film. You got to let the people who are good at running the franchise run the franchise. And I think they said that in the interview that they had with us as well, is, you know, and I think, Nevin, you asked a good question when we had that interview. I think it was you that asked the, you know, kind of the differences between the mediums, you know, doing something for a game versus doing something for long form film versus web series film versus, you know. And yeah. And they said that basically that you had to get people that were good at that. Just like you wouldn't have a bunch of film people necessarily go try to make a game. You know, it's a different venue, it's a different medium, and your audience is different. They have different expectations. So if you're going to have somebody who is good at something, put them in that position and let them do it. And to our knowledge, you know, and for what we saw, it certainly seemed that way. You know, when Stewart was going, no one was in his way. You know, yeah. He was just on it, and he's very involved. He is right there down where the cameras are. He is.
Yeah, he's on his feet the whole time, looking over the camera.
On his feet, or like laying down. I saw him a couple times on his stomach, you know, looking at the angle something might be shot at, you know, just all kinds of things. And I like that. I think it's cool and it's fresh. And, you know, sometimes you get the greatest, you know, breakthroughs from people who are unproven, quote unquote, as far as the rest of the universe is concerned.
Well, and the feeling that I got, and this is also, I should say, again, just pure conjecture on my part, but, you know, as far as the interactions between the director, Stewart, and with the franchise team at 343, like Frank O'Connor and Kevin Grace, all that work really, you'd think, would have to be done before you're on the set, right? Like, I'm sure they spent, you know, hours and days and weeks planning, talking, asking all the questions, answering all the questions, getting everything together, because the feeling I got was that, you know, they liked Stewart because of, as Jeff had mentioned, how efficient, how quickly he works, how and he looked to me like the kind of director who you put him on the set and you cut him loose and he will work like a maniac for 14, 16, 18 hours straight. I mean, the only moment that he was not on set the whole day we were there was when he stopped to do his interview with us. And then that was his lunch break. And then he was straight back onto the set. And he'd already been filming for a few hours when we got there. And they went for a few more hours after we left. And we were there for a good 9 or 10 hours. And so I got the feeling that it was one of those sort of, as Jeff said, you know, the franchise team gets all the ideas together. They fill him in on everything he needs to know. And they're right there if he has a question midway through. But other than that, it's sort of like I got really excited watching him because I saw that sort of creative hunger of like they just let this guy off of his leash and he was just attacking it. Right. And just shot after shot, scene after scene, as Jeff was saying, he was right up there with the cameraman, using his eye to make sure that every angle was right. What other angles could they use? You know, he clearly wasn't afraid to improvise and try new things on the fly, but get it done well and get it done quickly as well. So,
all right. Well, it's at least nice to know that you guys at least approve of the work that he's doing. So that means that it's in good hands.
That's all you really need.
Well, that was one of the good reasons why they invited you guys up there. It's good to have a community perspective. And while I was listening to your podcast, it was interesting to note that they came to you guys and they wanted to talk to you. I'm sure there was kind of a mutual feeling to them. You guys wanted to talk to them because they were acting in something that's really important to us. But the fact that they were interested in what you guys thought and were really down to earth and wanted that kind of personal connection is really important, I think.
Yeah, it was really interesting. People kept asking, like, you know, once we were able to talk about it, what was the best part? What was this? Was it? And it's, you know, so difficult to pinpoint that, obviously. But really, one thing that I kept coming back to was the way that we were treated was one of the best parts. And I mean that on many different levels. Like, just, you know, we were treated so well by the people at 343 and the people from Microsoft and the film crew that they brought out for us and the actors and the director and the specifically movie people that were there and the producers. Like, you know, they made it seem like they wanted us there because it was an important part of their process, not just like they were blessing us with this experience and we were so lucky to be there and we better be damn grateful that, you know, they brought us out there. I mean, they really treated it like, you know, like they brought us.
Yeah.
I don't want to say like they brought us out there like as consultants, because I think that's inflating us too much. Like, but it felt
but
like
they were
that.
Genuinely.
They made us feel like that, which, you know, that's half the battle right there. And, you know, we'd have people ask, well, what do you think? Like you said, the actors, what do you think about this? What do the fans think? What did they think when they first announced they were doing this project? Are they excited? You know, we really want them to be happy. I really want to do my character correctly, you know, and this. And, you know, we'd get stuff from Frankie and Kevin. You know, Kevin would ask, you know, what do you think about this? You know, what do you think the community is going to think about this? You know, especially a lot of fictional elements. And it was, you know, it made me feel really good that they valued our opinions enough to spend money. You know, it's not like they took us in where we were already at. You know, it's not like we all just kind of lived there already and they're like, oh, let's invite these local guys that won't cost anything. Like, we were as far away as possible. I was as far away as possible.
You're freaking on the other side of the continent.
Yeah, like, so it really was just the way that we were treated. Like, you know, Microsoft is a corporation. Yeah, they want to make money. So do I. So, like, you know, obviously, you know, there people are going to have issues with business practices and blah, blah, blah. And I, you know, as to avoid fanboyism. But you know what? Sometimes you can only go by your direct interactions with them. And I know I speak for me, if not all three of us, when I say that I was just ridiculously impressed by the people that Microsoft has in place running these kinds of things. Because say what you will about Microsoft themselves as an entity, it's still people that run it. And the people that we dealt with were nothing but immensely respectful and very gracious. And it was just a really cool experience. And that made the whole thing. Because if we were to go and experience everything and see all the cool stuff and the set, and we were treated like douchebags, and we were treated like just kind of shuffled around and shuttled, like, oh, see this, see this, see this, see this. Okay, don't go here. Don't do this. Don't touch this. Don't say that. That would have hampered it. And it wouldn't have been as cool no matter how much Halo you slapped on it. So,
right.
You know, that whole thing, like you said, it was just really neat to – it was really neat to have them kind of at least seem like they genuinely wanted our opinion. If they didn't, they did a damn good job faking it. So, you know, I'm fine with either scenario.
All right. A couple more things before we wrap up. The name of the place that they're doing their training is called Corbulo Academy of Military Science. We haven't seen that anywhere else, have we?
I don't believe so. Do they go into detail on that
at all in the series that you guys are aware of, or is this just it's something generic as of right now?
They stayed very tight-lipped on that, actually. There was a lot of stuff that they flat out, you know. Yeah, there were questions that we asked that they would not tell us, right? Even though we were already seeing a lot of top secret stuff, there was some information that they're like, nope, we're not going there. So, and that was one of we know absolutely nothing about where this is, how it fits into the story, other than the fact that it's a training academy. That's all we know.
All right.
It was held at a bit like in real life. It was at one of the aerospace academies there in Vancouver.
Right.
And what was really
hence the air hangar that we saw in all the interviews.
Yeah, actually, those planes that are behind us in the interview, I mean, although we weren't really there, we were green screened in. Just ask any commenter on YouTube. Those airplanes that were behind us were actually the teaching planes for that the students use there in real life, the actual students that go there. So, I mean, there were jets and, you know, big stuff, small stuff, helicopters, all kinds of crazy things in there. And it's for the students to get their hands-on experience with. So it was really cool. What was really funny is, like, that the actual physical space needed what seemed like so little alteration to make it look like a military academy.
Well, like three banners and suddenly it's Halo, right?
Yeah, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Polish the floors, put a sticker on it, you're done.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I was moving on. One of the things that I just thought up here a little bit ago, but there's always been kind of this interesting portrayal of humanity that the Chief shows off in some way throughout the games. And there's also, we see a little bit more with Cortana. But is there any kind of portrayal that we see of Master Chief having a human side in this thing? Or is it mostly this is one mean machine soldier that we have here and everyone is just as mystified as everyone else? Like, do we get any glimpse of Chief actually being a person?
I'm not sure.
Yeah, we honestly don't know. I mean, they told us so. We saw absolutely nothing of the Chief scenes being filmed, and they wouldn't tell us very much about how the plot was going to move or where it was going to go. The only guess I would take is that we've already mentioned that, you know, when this takes place, the Chief is quite young. He's I mean, we don't know exactly how old, but he's roughly the same age as the cadets, and I would bet that reveal is going to be a very powerful moment for the cadets, and it wouldn't surprise me if they play some reaction from the Chief into that as well, right? If that's that might be a bit of a glimpse into, even if we don't hear him say what he's going through or hear him talk about it, but we're seeing all these cadets go through this situation, and then the realization that, oh wait, he's not that different from us.
Yeah,
you know, uh-huh. Physically he is, but I mean, he's got to be like you would just, as a human being, either as a viewer or as a, you know, a character in that universe, you'd have to assume that he must be having some of the same issues that they're having. Or is he not? And if he isn't, then how the hell is he avoiding that, right? And so I think we, if I had to guess, I'd say we're going to see some reflective character development, if that makes sense. Like, okay, maybe not coming directly from the Chief, but coming through those around him, maybe.
All right. Because in the books, we see a lot of times where he's, like, in the presence of some of these other soldiers and Marines, they're very uptight, very focused, and tend to not show emotion. And then it's when they're with their own kind, when they're with Spartans or people like Halsey or Mendez, when they really start to show that, yes, they actually have a human side. And I just didn't know if there was possibly a portrayal of that in Ford Unto Dawn.
Yeah, I don't know. I'll be looking forward to finding out just right along with everybody else.
Last thing, the space mob.
What? That's what about the space mob?
What about it? What is it?
What is it?
That's what I'm asking.
I don't know.
You obviously know more than we do.
You know, the thing about it is, in all honesty, is that some puppies have like big ears, and some puppies have small ears, and no matter what, like, you can never tell if any of them are gonna like apples, because you just don't know. You just
what?
You know, I gotta agree with Jeff here. Dustin. You know, it's the ears, man. They just, these dogs, they have ears.
It's so bizarre. I mean, all of them do. It's like you expect eventually one or two dogs to have none, or maybe even just one, maybe sure, like one that flops over forward above the eyes to kind of shield it. It's weird.
To be fair, Dustin, I don't know what they're going on about right now.
so bizarre.
It is.
I do like, though, however,
I'm so confused.
I do like the fact that the Chief's armor is the Mark IV, and I actually kind of like that it's the package version, and it felt kind of like a rounded, like a softer edged version of the package armor, which is they kind of like unanimate it a little bit. Strangest
segue ever.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
Puppy ears, but I like Master Chief's armor.
I'm still trying to figure out how this relates to the space mobs.
You keep talking about this
Don't
thing.
Don't talk about the space mobs.
Yeah.
So Ford Unto Dawn takes place 25 or 30 years before the games, right?
Yes.
Okay. Just checking.
Yes. As far as we know.
We're really good at dodging questions, aren't we?
Man, we should work for 343. Uh-huh. We have a great relationship with
them.
Wow.
Demons.
All right. I guess that will be a mystery that remains a mystery.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
Not always.
No. You'll find out.
The space mobs.
What about the puppies? Yeah, they're great.
The Covenant secretly has been developing energy mops.
Oh my goodness. Oh, the space mops. All right.
Covenant got a clean, too.
That is true. That's true. Oh my gosh, the Skype chat's going to go crazy here in a second. on that note, thank you guys for listening to this. We get a good behind-the-scenes look at Fortnite to Dawn. Thanks to Dan, Nevin, and Jeff from the YouTube videos, and I hope that this podcast has been a pretty good sum up of everything that you've seen so far. Just want to point out a couple of things before we sign off. We do have our Rooster Teeth poster auction that is still going on. We have a signed Freelancer poster that I was able to get from Halo Fest, and they were.
Can I win that?
You can if you go to eBay. Right now, there's one of the bids is over $100.
Nice.
Another one is at 44. Well, the other one's at 44. All the proceeds are going to Child's Play. So you get a sign. It's signed by Bernie, Gus, Joel, Matt, and Caleb. You also get the Cortana Halo Legends poster, and then you get a Halo Fest badge as well. So there's three things in this little package that you can get. The bidding ends Saturday afternoon. So you have about maybe 2 days by the time this show comes out and you're listening to it. So if you want to get your chance in on that, make sure you can check out our site on podtagather.com. There's a post up there about it with the links to both auction items. I have had it posted on HBO. It's posted on Halo Unity and a couple other places. So make sure you check them out if you're interested. Also, please make sure you go and participate on our beta forums and help kind of shape the future of Podtacular. And hopefully those forums will be done by the time Halo 4 comes around, and we'll have a nice, pretty, and clean-looking forum. So make sure you check out these guys. Why don't you go ahead and run down what your guys' Twitter, YouTube, where to find you, etc., starting with Grim.
My Twitter is at GrimBrother1, all spelled out, and no spaces, obviously. And YouTube is The Grim Brothers TV, and you can find me over, primarily over at halo.bungie.org, and you can also find me over, at the Waypoint forums.
Sweet. Nevin.
Sure. On Twitter, I am at Cruel Legacy. I can't spell, so it's there's an E-Y at the end. It's L-E-G-A-C-E-Y. I'm Cruel Legacy on the Halo Waypoint forums, so you can find me there as well. And, of course, my website, cruellegacyproductions.com, where you can always find my latest videos there. All of my Forward Unto Dawn coverage is there, and playtime as well. And you can get in touch with me through my site as well. There's a contact button, so you can send me an email and reach out if you want to. So.
Here's to hoping for Playtime Season 4.
Yeah, me too.
Dan,
my Twitter is Greenskull. My Facebook is Greenskull.rul. And my YouTube is Ready Up Live, and readyuplive.com is our gaming forum. It's pretty awesome. And over at Halo Waypoint, just like these guys. And yeah, I like puppies.
Yes.
You and Jeff like puppies.
Oh, yes, we do.
They're nice. Their ears. There's just something about their ears.
It's just so floppy and lovey.
They're just great.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. If you guys have any comments or questions about any of the stuff that we talked tonight, make sure you send us a email at submissions@podtagler.com, or you can go to our website and use the big green button there. You can also send us a voicemail at 206-339-6937. We also take submissions for any game types that you're working on, custom maps, funny stories, anything that's Halo-related. Feel free to send it in via voicemail or email. Thanks again, guys, for listening to this show. And until next time, keep on fragging trucks.
Podtacular.
Podtacular.
Podfather.
Poderera.